This is the official EFL podcast with Mark Clement.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to a festive edition of the official EFL podcast with me, Mark Clement. In a week when an Argentinian goalkeeper who made his professional debut 10 years ago playing for Oxford United in a 3-0 defeat at Port Vale has just won the World Cup. No point in trying to add to that, really, is there? It's the official EFL podcast. As there or thereabouts, the EFL's three divisions reach their halfway point. Time for our very own Christmas visitor, the former Nottingham Forest, Southampton, Leeds United, Colchester United, Swindon Town, Sheffield Wednesday, Scunthorpe United and Coventry City midfielder. As you can hear, I've got a cold. I wish he didn't have quite so many clubs because he's used up some of my capacity. He is, of course, Sky Sports' main EFL presenter and sometimes host of this podcast. And I'm torn with this croaky voice of mine, you see, Pruts, because on the one hand, people don't want to hear somebody going, oh, listen to me, I've got a cold. On the other hand, some new people might be listening thinking, is that really how this bloke sounds? What's your strategy if you get ill on air? What's your strategy?
Well, first part of call is to say I hope you feel better very, very soon. Secondly, it would be blasting through it as much as possible. I think the gravelly nature and texture of it lends itself to late night love, doesn't it? And that is regional radio at its finest from the mid to late 90s, I think, which introducing the next showstopper. I think you could do this today at the time that we're recording, and there's got to be somebody somewhere that needs somebody in between the songs, a DJ, of course, that could do something so wonderful with that gravel.
Listen, if I get caught up and can't speak any more words, I'm just going to put a Barry White record on. Ask your grandparents who Barry White is, folks. I want to talk Emi Martinez. I mean, just staggering. 10 years ago, he makes his professional debut in Sky Bet League Two. And, well, here we are. What unbelievable story, really, isn't it? Just goes to show we should always be on the lookout for the next generation of stars when we're watching our EFL football.
We should indeed. It's staggering, really, that and the performance of the player. Obviously, the narrative about this World Cup of one of the greatest finals to send off one of the greatest players we've ever seen is absolutely set in stone. But to get that straight away, the dog barking.
Have I got a rival for my raspy voice?
It's. I'll be honest, the little fella's as jumpy as you can be sometimes. And energetic.
Oh, you cheeky little beggar. Do you need to go and give him a bone?
But also, like you, he calms down with a little tickle under the chin. So that's happened. So we can crack on if that's okay.
Yeah.
Apologies.
I think it might take more than a chuckle under the chin with me in this particular climate. What a final. We have to discuss this before we have a little look at the EFL. Unbelievable game. Were you screaming at the telly?
It was one of the, I mean, because we do watch so much football, don't we? And then you've got to sometimes remind yourselves that it is an actual, it's an event, a cultural sporting event seen and felt around the world. And I think it was the ebb and the flow of the game where it looked like Argentina were just going to stroll to what would be a very straightforward victory. France pulling the finger, well, Mbappe pulling his finger out, and bless the young fella that's scored a hat-trick in a World Cup final and a penalty in a penalty shootout, but still not on the winning side. It's a staggering turnaround, isn't it? But that, I mean, written in the stars, of course, you can sometimes feel this. And the scenes in Buenos Aires have just been stunning. There was a wonderful piece that I'd seen on, I think it was on Twitter, where there was a drone shot, which was in the centre of Buenos Aires, and it was flying obviously over and around all the fans and the flags, and just stunning to see, especially this day and age. Bear with me on this slight tangent. I went to watch Avatar last night, which is a phenomenally made movie and phenomenally long. So get yourself settled in the posh seats if you're going to go and watch that. But you watch it.
Might go for one of those bed cinemas where you can
definitely
actually lie down.
You can just doze off. So you watch it, and it's ultra and hyper realistic. But you know, most of what you're seeing there is generated with technology, which is staggering to think that technology can do something like that. The way the water looks, the way the kind of the trees, all that type of stuff. It's amazing. And you watch that, but then you come out and you think, well, so it's a wonder of technology and entertainment mixed together. So then you're watching these scenes in Buenos Aires where if you watch it in a film, more often than not, that would be computer generated. But you're thinking, my God, they are literally people as far as the eye can see there. That's hundreds of thousands of people in the same place feeling exactly the same emotion. The kind of thing that when you look at it and watch at it, because watch it, the amount of things that you see clipped up and made into all kinds of 10 seconds worth of entertainment on socials, sometimes there's an air of disbelief about what you're seeing. There's things that are mocked up, there's things that are faked. But watching that, the kind of communion element of what football is in a country that seems so unbelievably passionate, it really does kind of reverberate in your earliest footballing memories. Obviously, Diego Maradona lifting the World Cup in Mexico in 86, and it felt like there were about 500,000 people watching that game. I mean, there was a lot, but there wasn't that many. But it buys into what football is. It's a populist sport that breaks down so many boundaries that to see that many people just in love with what they're seeing is such a glorious thing, isn't it?
And to come back to Martinez, there's just that element of the street rat there as well, isn't there? Which I guess all good teams need. There's just that element to stretch the rules occasionally and stuff, which is part of the mix of winners.
Of course it is. And it's the whole, it's I suppose loosely termed as gamesmanship, but it's brinkmanship more than that, because it is him saying, you've got to beat me now. And the best goalkeepers have got a great physical stature, but the best ones seem to grow when penalties come into it. And you saw him, he looked ginormous. You're kind of thinking, I don't know, there's no gap there. I don't know how on earth you're going to score. That's the wonderful thing that he's done. I mean, the save right at the death as well. We had Schmeichel coming out in the air doing the starfish. Emi seemingly created a save of his own, coming down low to feet, making himself as big as possible. And he came in very, very, very briefly as I was meandering out the door at Sheffield Wednesday.
I wanted to ask you about this, because I'm going to be absolutely honest with these various loan spells of one game for Oxford, then Wednesday, Rotherham, Wolves and Reading. Probably didn't make a ginormous impression on me, which is no slur on the man. My opinion is important. But you get so many loanees coming in from some of the bigger clubs, don't you? Do you have any recollection of any sort of interaction with him at Wednesday?
The recollection from my side of it would have been, he seemed like a nice kid. I was on my way out there. So you on the periphery of the team, and then I'd gone out on loan. So hadn't really kind of seen him up close other than in the dressing room. But so the kind of, as you are at that level, when someone comes in from a big team and you kind of, part of you thinks, part of the way of winning over an older pro, again, whether he was remotely bothered, is if he comes in and he's not a total whopper. And he wasn't. He was a nice lad. He came in, he had this wonderful way of just being polite. Good morning, yes. I don't know who you are, but good morning, yeah. And it would just seem lovely, really, really lovely. And to see how it's kind of progressed. I mean, the lad that I met for, I don't know, a few minutes, a decade ago, if you'd have said he was going to win the World Cup, I'd have probably kind of looked at you in a slightly questioning way. But what he's done is absolutely, it's the stuff of boyhood dreams, isn't it? Of what you, when you're kicking about with your mates, it's winning the World Cup, isn't it? That's what he has literally done. And it's an awesome sight to see.
Really is. I just wondered, have you kept an eye on any of the returnees from the World Cup, the players that have already been embedded back in championship clubs? Are you conscious of that? Because I'm imagining that could be a little bit difficult to, you know, suddenly come back to freezing temperatures in the league when you're used to the sort of kudos of being with a team that might or might not have been competitive in the World Cup.
Well, the key ones that I'm looking forward to seeing are the ones that I've enjoyed seeing thus far, not only this season, but last. So, Illiman and Jai, Ilias Chir, and Anas Zorori, who's been a wonderful addition to the championship. So, that what they've done collectively with their teams before going to the World Cup and then going off and playing on the biggest stage, the culture shock of coming back to what the championship is and getting back to it. And just reflecting, I think, because me and you both love this division, sets of divisions so much, don't we? That to see them flying the flag for what we term our football is wonderful to see. Yeah, I'm coming back. I mean, obviously, if you're in a team that's top of the league doing very, very well, if you're in a team that's second doing very, very well, and if you come back and you've got a new manager, well, in Ilias Jerz's case, you're kind of thinking, all right, okay, let's another set of hurdles to jump over and let's see where we end up.
Yeah. I bumped into Tom Lockyer of Luton, who was an unused squad member for Wales. And he said to me, I said, what do you, you know, such a rampant national anthem, what goes through your mind? He just gave me a lovely little quote. He said, I actually thought about my grandmother and it kind of brought this emotional tear to my eyes. I stood there and everybody belted this out. They're just those lovely little moments which you've described so beautifully with Argentina's celebrations. General observations as we're at this halfway point, overall quality this season, thoughts, trends across the whole of the EFL, anything come to mind?
Well, I think a lot of chat, of course, if we start at the very, very top with Burnley. What they've done, how they've done it, how Vincent Kompany's approached it alongside Craig Bellamy. We get, as you do, Clem, you get the benefit of chatting to players that have managed to work their way through this league, get themselves promoted from this league.
Yeah.
In Burnley's case, when they last dropped down, Sean made it look very, very straightforward, didn't he? There's been a lot of talk, and it's always something that I'm keen to stress with regards to how Burnley have changed. But Sean keeping them in the Premier League for as long as he did was a minor miracle, to be honest. And just because Vincent Kompany seems to be doing it in a slightly different way halfway through, doing it extremely well, doesn't make it any more valid or any more kind of worthy. It just shows that he's adapted to the league exceptionally well. And the player recruitment, we mentioned Zorori, Manuel Benton is another one that's looked superb. It's credit to them because of how straightforward they've made it. And not in a sense of reflecting on the general quality of the Championship, because we've seen bright starts from the likes of Reading, who've tailed off, of course, QPR as well. Preston, I think, another team that's doing some great work under Ryan. But what I've seen so far with Vincent Kompany's Burnley, as you've got to call them, like Frank Lampard's Derby, you've got to call them after the manager's full handle, don't you? Has been superb. And again, it flies slightly in the face of me blowing so much smoke up their collective behinds. But that game against Sheffield United at Bramall Lane, that's one of the best Championship games I've seen in a very, very long time. It was a stunning game of football, a stunning game of football.
And we brought it up when Josh Brownhill joined us last week on the official EFL podcast, because afterwards, Vincent Kompany just took it in his stride and said, actually, this is probably a good opportunity for us to press the reset button and examine some of those things that we're getting away with that were perhaps not great. You'd have to say as well that they would probably be the most pleasant surprise, wouldn't you? Because of the three relegated teams, probably they were least fancied to bounce back. Vincent Kompany's own management career with Anderlecht was only okay, when you bear in mind the wholesale change of style, personnel, expectations. Got to be the sort of number one surprise of the season.
Yeah, I think so. And you're absolutely right, Clem, to reference it with regards to what we've seen from the other teams that have come down, which have been in varying states of distress. A big call from a big player who, I mean, this is a general presumption of a player that played at his level for as long as he did. I mean, you can put other top players into that particular bracket of, they're not going into Championship football to make ends meet, are they? They're going in because they want to prove themselves. They want to work their way up a ladder that possibly gets Vincent Kompany managing Manchester City at some stage, or some huge Premier League club at some stage. This is the first step of seeing what week in, week out in the Championship is like. And I think, the way that he deals with us guys as well, I'm, and again, having had the pleasure of doing this job for quite a while, and the different dynamics of the people that you meet, You professionally, you take it in your stride, don't you? Because you can't just kind of sit there like a goldfish, mouth agape, listening to what this manager's saying. You've got to actively have a chat with him. But you do kind of, as he walks off, you kind of go, it's Vincent Kompany. Look how big he is in real life. He's massive.
Well, there was that lovely start as well when they played Borough at the weekend, that Vincent Kompany and Michael Carrick had got 9 Premier League titles between them. And you do go, whoa, this is the Sky Bet Championship.
And again, I mean, it's slightly, I'd say slightly further down the table, but not as far down as it was when it comes to discussing your boys up there. There's been a very quiet little, obviously, take away the weekend, notwithstanding, which was again another helter-skelter game, but little quietly very good work being done, I think, up on Tiso.
Yeah, we'll see what happens over the second half of the season. Let's try.
Jury's out. Love that.
Opposite, actually. I'm being a manager. I'm trying to slip under the radar. I wanted to talk to you about Burnley's local rivals, Blackburn. The fact that they still haven't drawn a game. Is that purely coincidence, or is that kind of consequential of the way that they play, i.e. we might as well go for it, and if the consequence occasionally is that we don't get any points, we'll still get loads by winning some of those games?
I think from a fan's point of view, sorry, a neutral fan's point of view, it's thrilling to watch because, like you say, they're either going for it or getting handed, taking the points away and swiftly kicked out whichever ground they're in. The fact that they've lost that many games, so you're getting down towards Stoke in 17th, they've also lost 10, Bristol City. Then after that, Cardiff, Hull City, Blackpool, Wigan, Huddersfield, the bottom six clubs, they're the only ones that have lost more than Blackburn. And then you've got Blackburn, a team that are in third in the division. Booed off against Preston at half time, coming off the back of the restart, and you're kind of thinking, this is the team that's third in the Championship. Albeit, yes, it's been a kind of lethargic first half, and that's when fans obviously need to make their feelings known. But I think the reaction that we see from them from that disappointment is credit to Yondal Thomason. They've got some terrific younger players, and I think you kind of forget the youth that is involved in that team, because I was operating under the assumption wrongly, and it probably helps when you read a stat pack, is you're looking at Ben Brereton Diaz going, well, he could be on a free transfer. You're thinking, well, 26, 27, and he needs to pull his finger. I'm sorry, he's 23. He's 23 years old. That's bizarre.
He does look very old, in fairness, doesn't he?
He does. He's had a hard time carrying his wallet around after his big move for Forest. But the expansive way that they play, I think, is wonderful to watch. And against the Norwich side, who are and still remain heavily fancied, who don't sound happy at this moment in time either, they didn't get a goal and sit back. They played wonderful counter-attacking football, which I think is possibly, when you look at their home record as averse to their away record, playing on the counter-attack is their absolute strength. And you know, classically and stereotypically, you don't get many teams playing on the counter-attack at home, because there is that first thought as a home fan thinking, well, why are we letting the other team dominate possession? Why aren't we taking the game to them? Well, if you're good at a certain thing, it's more apt to stick to that certain thing, even though it might mean that you enter a home game with an away-type feeling, which stands them in better stead.
Norwich were the other team that I had made a note of to talk to you about. No wins in the first three, then seven out of eight, then three in the last 12. Weird form and strange rod for his own back that Dean Smith has probably made by having his pop at the fans last weekend.
It's a funny atmosphere sometimes down there at Carrow Road, isn't it? I mean, the packet to the rafters, it's a very, very loyal fan base. They seem to thoroughly enjoy the football, obviously, as and when it's going particularly well. But murmurings that were at the start of the season off the back of that run that you'd mentioned, Clem, and then full-blown anger, it felt and sounded like, with regards to how Dean was leading the team and the type of football that they were playing, was so loud that you're kind of looking at it thinking, are things going that terribly bad? Yes, you look at the home form. I think it's one win in the last seven at Carrow Road, which, given the form of a team such as this the last couple of times during the Championship, made it look relatively straightforward, didn't they? I mean, you'd have to say that the players that they did have, Emi Buendia being the big difference in the sense of knowing exactly telepathically where Timo Pukki wants the ball, meant that they made kind of light work of the Championship. I think it's going to be a tougher test for them this season. I really do, given how good we've mentioned Burnley have been, Sheffield United, that kind of chastening defeat in the playoffs, that feels like their motivation. But for Norwich, tricky times.
Ruts, I want to mention law of averages. I think if you look back over the history of football, what is the chance of a team bouncing back three times? I think you probably would find that nobody has ever done it. So even if you had them, you know, any thought that it was Norwich City's natural right to just bounce straight back, I think that just pees in the eye of conventional wisdom.
There was, and apologies if I misremembered the quote, something along the lines of the hierarchy talking about being the top 20. They wanted to be in the top 26 teams in the top two divisions, which of course doesn't really make any sense when there's a massive gap between the two, and one's the Premier League, one's the Championship. But that that allows them to dip the toe in the Premier League, and obviously the finances that come with that, but also know exactly where they are, and still, and we've got to respect the club for the way it's run in economical terms, of course. I mean, it's a chat about Norwich City that's never really come to fruition about them being in a perilous situation off the pitch, has it? So, well done to the way it's run off the back of that. But I think you're absolutely right at some stage, because I think if you went through the squad, there'd be players there that have managed to create those two promotions, but also have been well-being in the Premier League. So there'll be the psychological impact of that. And plus the freshness of seeing clubs in the Championship that this season, I think if you probably look down all the way to about 20th and think there'll be clubs in there that genuinely think, put a run together and we can give it a proper go to at least get in the playoffs.
That was exactly my next question. If you had to pick one name who might make a bit of a dent over the second half of the season, who would it be?
Well, you've already poo-pooed it slightly because you don't want me to tempt fame. One of them that sticks out.
Yeah, Middlesbrough.
Yeah, Borough. I think having seen Preston, not only in that game against Blackburn, obviously they followed it up with defeat to QPR, but speaking to Ryan and seeing that bunch of players firsthand, I think they've got a decent outside chance. Coventry, that name, that team sticks out. So many things for them to have to deal with. It almost seems like the football is completely incidental to what goes on, bless them. So possibly them. I've given you three names there, and I apologise for that. But I was speaking to, I can't remember which manager it was, but or former manager, or in between jobs manager, shall we say, because that's what they are, aren't they, when they come and grace us with their presence. There's a genuine appetite and ambition so far down the league that, given how concertina it is, that there's a lot. And let's be honest, also, there's a lot that have had to pull the fingers out. You feel Stoke are approaching that point, and West Brom seemingly have done that. So another one to keep an eye on.
Your Boxing Day fixtures and in the Sky Bet Championship, loads of different kickoff times. Watford Millwall is midday. Blackburn's trip to Sunderland is 12:30. Sheffield United still in second at home to Coventry is at 3:00. Then QPR's trip to Cardiff is at 5:15. Norwich's trip to Luton is at 8:15. Burnley don't play until Tuesday. They are at home to Birmingham. Sky Bet League One. Are we seeing at the top of the table a couple of the brightest young managers if we look ahead a few years down the line in Kieran McKenna and in Stephen Schumacher?
Yeah, I think so. I think two slightly different ways of finding themselves in these jobs. Obviously, we had Stephen doing great kind of lieutenant work with Ryan Lowe. Ryan then heads back up north. I think he was expecting Stephen to follow him and kind of come back and take up arms next to him. That didn't happen. So he gets the opportunity to take over a very big club with an increasingly more engaged fan base, playing some very good football, sat at the top of the league. Why not? Shake hands, yep. Let's see who moves on and you guide that club. Obviously, the heartbreak of just missing out on the playoffs is something I think that's motivated them this season. And in Ipswich, again, having had the pleasure and the privilege of being able to speak to Kieran, is being led by a manager who is very well respected in the game. He's got some wonderful ideas, very calm and softly spoken. I did ask him whether there is a gear change in there.
What did he say?
He fixed me with full eye contact. Not in any way to put me in my place, but just to say, yeah, there is. Don't worry about that. There's definitely that gear change when it's needed. Which, given the football that they're playing, I saw them away at Exeter on a lunchtime kickoff. Which, let's be honest, it's no mean feat getting from one side of the country to the other for a lunchtime kickoff. And the away fans they'd packed it out. They pack it out to a certain degree at home, and they were treated to some great football and a very assured performance. And I think Kieran understands the weight of expectation there. And we're not just talking about the recent history of Ipswich, but the great managers that have walked through those doors and led that club to some wonderful things. And he actively appreciates that. He takes that on board. And I think you're absolutely right, because I think Stephen is probably knocking around my age. Maybe I've aged him a year or two, but with Kieran being 36, if I remember rightly, the youngest permanent manager in the divisions, it's stunning, really. But then we talk about these younger coaches. We talk about former players that then become coaches themselves. Kieran's been coaching for the best part of 15 years. You know, there's not many that difference of active playing experience and then going into coaching, which is a different skill set. It's the same game, different skill set entirely. I remember asking Alex Neil about this, and he said about when he went from player manager to manager. He said, the biggest, most straightforward thing I can tell you of what you have to deal with is, one minute you're sat in a group of 25 eyes looking at one pair of eyes. The next minute in the meeting, you're that one pair of eyes looking at 25 eyes, looking sets of eyes looking back to you. And they're all going, "God, what are the answers, please?" And he said, you've got to very quickly understand how to deliver, how to deal, how to be able to get your points across. And we talk about Kieran being a young manager at 36 years old, but with that bank of experience across the board, whether it's in big football clubs, whether it's at Loughborough, whether it's managing under Jose Mourinho, whether it's what he's found out from Poch, it's coming to fruition there. And I mean, sleeping giant is a term thrown about, and let's be honest, there's a load of them slumbering away in League One, isn't there, given their Premier League pedigree. He seems to be leading the line for the first batch to get themselves back in the Championship.
Seems rather ominous as well. I mean, I noticed Wickham have had a slightly better run of late, 3 wins of their last 5. And then I look at the cluster just below: Plymouth, Ipswich, Sheffield Wednesday, Barnsley, Bolton, Derby. There's a whole load of promotion experience amongst the managers of those three clubs.
There is. And I think, given, as we've seen, and we've spoken about it so many times, haven't we, with Paul Warne and what he's done with Rotherham, akin to the kind of yo-yo version between League One and Two of the Championship, as Norwich have been between the Champ and the Premier League, he's the man that knows how that operates, how that works. I still think maybe we thought we'd see him take over and they'd be making a serious tilt at the top two. But I think as long as they're in that debate for the playoff places, as you say, along with Barnsley and Bolton, I mean, the wonderful stat, I mean, it doesn't help the fans of these sides, but is it 7 or 8 in this division that have been in the Premier League? I mean, we are talking some of them a very, very long time ago, but it certainly shows the strength and how far some of them have fallen. But I think it makes for what would be a terrific, from now on into the, when we're talking about in May, which is obviously a very long time away, that fight for the playoff places. We could have a League One playoff final, which has got 85,000 people in watching because of the size of the clubs involved.
You've caught me doing live maths to try and arrive at your number. I've got to 7. I'll do this with more authority.
It's either 7 or 8.
Good. Nothing like being Vegas there between us. Your Boxing Day fixtures then in Sky Bet League One. Barnsley, who are currently fourth, go to Accrington. Stanley, the leaders, Plymouth are at Cheltenham. Sheffield Wednesday go to Fleetwood. Ipswich at home to Oxford United. And then on Tuesday night, there is a rather tasty encounter between fifth and sixth. That is Bolton Wanderers against Derby County. What is the challenge now for Richie Wellens in Sky Bet League 2 and Leighton Orient, Pruts? Because, I mean, that is a ridiculous lead to hold, isn't it? 16 points to fourth, and he's only played 21 games. I mean, obviously, the challenge is to hold off and see it all the way through, but what could go wrong with a lead of that unassailable amount?
Well, I think this reminds me of conversations we had at the start of this year, I think it was, when you saw what Forest Green were doing. We were very complimentary, as you should be, when a team does so well, of course, in the first half of a season. We were kind of thinking there'll be when, not if, which then again goes to show that the league can absolutely start nipping away your backside. So the professional challenge is to maintain the pace that they've set so far. The personal challenge, from Richie's point of view, and I think we've both spoken to him about his career, over the course of several seasons and the type of player that he was, that over overwhelming tenacity to be able to say, come on, lads, I think we could do something pretty special here. We want to show the rest of the league just how good we actually are. You know, do you want to show how dominant, not only week by week, game by game, but by the end of the season when they are crowned, hopefully for that, from their point of view, undoubtedly champions, that they are far and away the best team? Then obviously that big test comes after the summer when you get promoted and the next division comes knocking and it shows you what it's all about. But that's his challenge, I think, when I process it right now. I really do feel Stevenage and Northampton, you have to mention Dispatches, given where they are in the division. But what Richie's done after being, I mean, I even said it himself, then he parachuted in to save a club that wasn't swimming in the right direction to then hit the ground running this season. And what he talks about are, as ever, the fundamentals, and he understands different levels of football. I mean, given as well his time at Donny and his time at Salford over the course of a managerial career that's had its ups and its downs, it's great when things are playing sailing as they are right now for Richie Orient. I'm sure somewhere deep inside, though, there's the little seeds of what Salford have sown. And being at a place like Donny, in the position that they were in, and seeing those clubs exactly how they were managed and the kind of relative states both were in, one obviously looking to get promoted, one fighting for its safety, that I think it stood him in really good stead to lead Leighton Orient. He seems a very happy bunny. I mean, he never comes across as a happy bunny, but then there you go. That's Manx for you, isn't it?
I'd just like to distance myself from the last sentence uttered by David Brudden.
Well, of course, I can only say that because I'm from the right side of the Pennines. That 7-point lead that they have, like you say, they're a challenge. That's what it is, to maintain the pace that they've set so far. And we talk about how these World Cup stars are going to come back and deal with playing in the Premier League. Spare a thought for Leagues 1 and 2. They've just kept cracking on and playing through. And that's exactly what Leighton Orient and Richie need to do now between here and the end of the season.
Some massive fixtures in the next round as well. Boxing Day, 7th v 8th is Carlisle v Bradford City. 5th v 3rd is Mansfield Town against Northampton. 6th place, Barrow. They head to Salford. Swindon, who are 4th, are at home to Walsall. And then on Tuesday the 27th, there is the rather juicy, mouth-watering lunchtime kickoff as First takes on Second, Leighton Orient against Stevenage. I like at this point, with only a few days to Christmas as we record this, just to make sure everything has been dealt with in your household.
Well, in every possible sense, no, and it never will be, but that's a very, very different podcast, my friend. It's more on that later. But in the strictest Christmassy sense, I would like to think yes. And you?
Pretty good. And obviously with my ailment that is so restricting me today, it's good to know that everything's been taken care of and I don't have to start running around the place, coughing, spluttering and spreading my germs around the country. Pleasure as always. Merry Christmas to you and yours.
Well, Clem, and the same back to you, my friend. And hopefully there's many more of these chats over the coming months as we build up to that glorious crescendo under the arch, of course, somewhere in some lovely establishment as we look back at what hopefully, fingers crossed, will be another fantastic season.
Yeah, I know we'll talk about it only being one drink and it'll end up being about 8. Not that I can even think of it with this inflicting ailment that I have at the moment. Merry Christmas!
All the best, my friend.
That is it for this festive episode. A big thank you to David Brudden. If you've enjoyed it, please do give us a 5-star rating, press the subscribe button and share on your socials. If you'd like to get in touch, our email address is podcast@efl.com. That's podcast@efl.com. I'm Mark Clement. Merry Christmas and join us again soon for another episode of
The Official EFL Podcast.